Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cricket with an Accent. This is your host, Saqib Ali. Last we spoke to each other was, I think, in January. So we're into our second episode of the year. We promised to be more regular. At least the intent is there. But today we couldn't be breaking our silence in more style because this kind of company don't really walk through these gates. We have a professor who teaches at Ivy League institution, alumni of IIT, you know, Mumbai, and founding fathers of Crick Info. You guessed it. Vishal Mishra has taken time out from busy schedule to talk to me at Cricket with an Accent, and we look forward to a super conversation. Vishal, thanks for doing this.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure is all mine. So again, a standard podcast question is, you are the feature, you are the story. We'll talk about stats. For an average listener who may not know your biography well, I mean, we like that as a plug-in in the beginning. So what is your connection with cricket? You could have done so many other things. Why cricket became part of your life? So how far does it go back?
So cricket for me goes back all the way to my childhood. There was a one sport I played every day, as far as I can remember. Even while, you know, I was preparing for JE, I used to play cricket every day. JE used to be a two-day exam, I remember. After the first day exam, I came back and I played cricket. So cricket has been, you know, a constant feature in my life for forever. And the love for the game continued when I moved to the country, moved to the US in 1993. And those days, getting information about cricket was difficult. And that partly led to cricket.
Yeah, I mean, I was I followed, I guess, you to the United States 2 years later. I came in 1995. I was just using, you know, doing some research, mild research for your articles. And yeah, so the timelines are there. So in 95, what do you remember of the time? How were you? Because I'm a bigger tennis fan. So tennis was still more easily accessible in the States. So I made peace with myself for the first few years that I wouldn't get much cricket till I call home. So what were you doing to get your cricket fix, and how did the Cricket Info journey started?
So, tennis is a mainstream sport in the US, so I guess you had it easier with tennis. But cricket, unfortunately, was not. So when I got to this country, as soon as I arrived, I found the local. I went to UMass Amherst for my grad school. So as soon as I arrived, I found the local cricket team. So this was in fall of 93. And my first week in the US, second week in the US, I was driving from Amherst to New Haven to play cricket for the UMass cricket team. So I found cricket on the field. But getting news about cricket was very difficult. The internet was really very nascent those days. There were barely any websites. And to get real information about cricket, you either had to call home, or we used to drive to Boston from Amherst. And in Harvard Square, there used to be this bookstore that would sell Indian magazines. And you know, you'd always get India Today. Sometimes, if we were lucky, I think we would get Sports Star or Sports World. I'm trying to recall what we'd get, but you know, you'd get these old magazines, and that's how you got your cricket fix. But after a few months here in the US, I discovered IRC. Well, I discovered the cricket news group, rec.sport.cricket, Usenet. And through that, I discovered IRC. And there I found this community of cricket lovers. And Simon King, who was the founder of Cricket, who had already started Cricket 4 by then. And I found myself sort of drawn into that community.
All right, so for a listener who doesn't know, I think Amherst to New Haven must be, what, 60, 70 miles one way, right? So correct me if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
So that's like, what, roughly 110 kilometers you were driving one way to play cricket?
Yes. And the funny thing was, it was my second weekend I was driving because the car that we had, an extra car, was stick shift. And none of the local guys knew how to drive a stick shift. I knew how to drive a stick shift. So even before I actually had a U.S. license, I was driving members of the cricket team to New Haven to play cricket.
So you did mention, I was also reading the article, you already had mentioned IRC. That's where you met your partner in crime, Travis. So
Travis, yes.
IRC, is that even a terminology that a young listener today would understand? You want to elaborate on that?
No, I don't think anyone would understand what IRC is. So IRC, it stands for Internet Relay Chat. And it was like these, think of Twitter, but live. And you would have different rooms where people would go and talk about whatever the subject of that room would be. So, you'd have rooms for tennis or for football or whatever. And there were cricket rooms as well. And I discovered that. So fans would log in to an IRC server using, IRC clients, the way you have Twitter clients, and then connect to specific servers where the cricket room was hosted. And in that room, you'd find other fans. So, you can imagine 30, 40 sort of cricket fans. They're chatting with each other real time. So, it's like a group, live group text going on there. So
And
there was cricket there.
this was still in 93, or this was more like
This was still
95?
93. No. 95, I was well into it. No, 93.
Okay.
And so besides cricket, there was also CI group, which is Crick Info Group, RCI. So yeah, I guess Slack is also probably an analogy there. It's like Slack groups. So there would be a cricket channel and there was this Crick Info CI channel. I was very sort of those days passionate about open source software and things like that. I was the first Linux user of India when I was in IIT Bombay. And when I got to cricket, Hash Cricket, and I found out about Crick Info and that there was this one single server that Crick Info used, I started talking to them, you guys should move to Linux, this and that. And I started talking all system stuff. And Simon saw that and he said he kind of invited me to become part of the team to take over the system issues.
How big was the
And
team back
that, so I would say it was an amorphous group. When I joined, there used to be a mailing list called MGMT at CI, management at CI. And that had maybe, nominally it had like seven, eight members. But there were only three, four, five of us who were working actively building Crick Info those initial days. And then slowly the team grew.
Sure. And again, no conversation is going to be complete without Travis. So how did you guys, did you guys also meet on the IRC and then,
We met on IRC.
and were you
And
invited by Simon at the same time, or one guy led the other guy? How did that play out?
it's difficult for me to remember how it played out. But Travis and I, we sort of hit it off right away. We had a shared sense of humor. He had a very Australian, wry sense of humor, which I liked. And we used to love the show called Beavis and Butthead. And both of us were passionate about stats, cricket stats. So we found lots of common things and we, hit it off instantly. Trying to recall if I met Travis before I formally joined CI or was it because of CI? I don't actually remember at all. It was all sort of in a very short span that I got involved with the community.
Yeah, I read the piece you wrote after the unfortunate passing of Travis, and then the three components that you guys work together mainly on Crick Info. It's a scorecards archive and live scorecard infrastructure, and then finally Stats Guru. Again, let's spend some time on these. With Scorecards Archive, what kind of information were you working on when you started, you got this undertaking, and the rest is history. Now, what was the database, or what was the repository looking like? Where were these? How in what shape were these scorecards? I don't want to use an unfancy word, but walk us through the Scorecard Archive project.
So let me walk you through the origin of Crick Info. As I told you, I found Crick Info on IRC, and the original Crick Info was an IRC bot, which Salmon wrote. So a bot is, a piece of software which is there on a channel, like a user. But there's no human behind the user. It's software running as a user. And what you could do is you could send messages to this Crick Info bot, and it would respond back if it had answers to the queries. And what Salmon wrote, that Crick Info bot was able to store some text files that you could retrieve by sending queries in a specific format to that bot. And so what used to happen in those days was the Crick Info bot would store these text file scorecards, which people would type up. So, they would read a scorecard from a newspaper, or if, they were from Australia or UK or wherever, they were fortunate enough to have live coverage, they would see it on the television, type it up, and upload the text file to the Crick Info bot. And slowly from that bot, Crick Info evolved to running a Gopher server. So Gopher, you can think of it as precursor to the web. And Salmon was at the University of Minnesota as a postdoc, and another one of Crick Info's co-founders, Niran Karnik, who's now back in India in Pune, he got Gopher running for Crick Info. So Gopher, you can think of as almost like a text-only interface to Cricket, to sorry, to the web. So from IRC, Crick Info moved to Gopher. And in a year or so, I helped it move to the web. We actually wrote our own web server when Crick Info moved. This was before Apache existed. So what used to exist in those days, the database is a very fancy term for what we have, what we had in those days, were these text files. And these text files were somebody would type up a match report from some newspaper or type up a scorecard. And everyone would, type these up in the format they chose fit, whatever they could copy from the newspaper. So every newspaper has their own way of printing scorecards, and people would use that format. Often they would make mistakes while copying it from the newspaper or magazine. So we had these text-only scorecards, which were, often riddled with errors. They were not accurate. And we barely had scorecards for, you can say, 1 or 2% of all the games that had been played so far. So before Travis and I, we embarked on this project of completing the scorecard archive. The Crick Info database of scorecards was incomplete. Incomplete is not even the right term. It was barely there. And whatever was there was not accurate. So this was a task that Travis and I took on, and Simon kept pushing us to do it, is to get an accurate scorecard archive on Crick Info.
Incredible. I mean, so what was Wisden or other publication consulted to get the historical data? I mean, were there other starting points to fetch this data and then do bulk uploads if there was a bulk upload at some point?
So what there used to be a Windows software available there where different statisticians had made it available, where they had uploaded their own scorecard archives, and you could run the software to run stats on series or a player and so on and so forth. So we were trying to finish or create the scorecard archive, and we tried to get hold of raw data, but it was difficult. So then Travis and I hit upon this idea that why don't we run the stats software for one of these packages were there, one test at a time. That would give us the raw data that is required, and from that raw data, we could create our own version of the scorecard format. So for each test match, we would run each test match and each ODI, we would run the software to produce stats And those stats had everything that we needed to recreate the scorecard. So that's what we did. We got hold of one of these software packages, and we made it export stats for every test match and every one-day international that had been played so far. But even then, these packages still had errors. So what we had to do was, once we created the scorecard, Travis would then go and double check the scorecards against his physical copies of the Wisden archive. So he had physical copies of Wisden, and he would cross check. And then, to speed up this whole process, what we did was we wrote our own, well, I'm using we as a euphemism, because then Travis could code to save his life. He didn't know how to code. So what he would do is he would double check and, give suggestions on what to implement, what not to implement, and I would do it. And so what I did was I wrote some scripts that would take our scorecards and run stats on them. So then what we would do is we would take scorecards of an entire series, run stats on them, and then instead of checking each scorecard, we check the aggregate stats against, the series stats that were published in Wisden and other places. And if they matched up, then you know that, okay, the input scorecards were also correct. So that sped up our process quite a bit. If we found some series where it didn't match up, then we'd go back. Well, again, now we is a euphemism. This time the we was Travis. He would go and look up each scorecard and see where the error was against Wisden. So Wisden was our final authority, but our starting point was the software package through which we exported raw data and then converted it into the CricInfo format that we had created. Then we'd run stats on the CricInfo format and then double check the stats against Wisden stats.
Incredible. Again, listeners, I mean, like myself, must be, it's taking us to a place like today we take all this for granted, that how this
Right.
evolution take place. So again, if you remember, what were the major American sports live scoring? Because that's my next question, looking like, was like a baseline, I mean, product that you had in mind, or Simon wanted
There
you
was
guys to work?
no live scoring of any sport anywhere. In fact, there's an article on CNN which says that we were the pioneers. We invented live scoring, cricket
Really?
or cricket. Yeah,
So
and
when
I'll
was
send
the
you a link to
first,
that article.
what, 96, right? Was it the first?
96 World Cup. Yeah.
So were these projects going in parallel, or you finished this the scorecard archives first and then moved to this? What was the sequence of events?
So, scorecard archive, we finished in the summer of 1995, I remember. In fact, you can still go and search through Google Groups or rec.sport.cricket, and you'll find an announcement by Simon or Badri, I forget who, announcing the scorecard archive. This is end of summer 1995. And live scoring did not start until 1996 World Cup. Okay, let me correct that. We did have some form of live scoring, but it was not really live. What would happen was, as games were going on, one of our volunteers would hand edit a scorecard and upload it to CricInfo every few hours or so. So that was our approximation of live scoring, which used to happen for, very few of the games. But 1996 World Cup, we really started covering games live, ball by ball. And that's a story in itself
That's
of
surprising.
how
I,
that came
again,
about.
yeah, I would have thought like baseball or some other sport would have led the, led the path, but it's incredible. It's cricket. Because I used to follow a lot of live scoring in tennis in the late 90s. I can't
Yeah.
identify what year. I would just go to the ATP Tour website and just sit and follow the scores. Scores changes, advantage becomes deuce, then it becomes 6-3. Interesting.
So it's this kind of unique set of circumstances that led to it, which is the internet had just arrived there in the early 90s. Internet was primarily there in the US. US was sort of the center of the internet. Cricket was not popular in the on the internet or in the US, but there were, you can say, lots of cricket crazy fans in the US who also happened to be reasonably good at software. So there was this need to get live scoring, and with other sports, you could always watch it on TV, right? There was no shortage of live tennis for you on television. So there was no sort of this need or craving for live scoring on the internet for other sports. Whereas for cricket, there was. So I would say it was just a coincidence. Stars aligned that way that cricket had to invent live scoring.
When you look back at all these components, the three pieces of work that are instrumental in Cricinfo, StatsGuru, live scoring, and the scorecard, which one? Again, I'm sure it's hard to, it's just asking to pick which is your favorite, child, if that's an analogy. But how do you look back, and which one is more significant than the other from the consumption point of view? How today's fan and today's cricket media, everybody relies on data. So you guys set the ball in motion. So any personal favorite of the three projects?
I would say just in terms of impact, live scoring has been the most impactful. So completing the scorecard archive was very important in terms of bringing credibility to Cricinfo. That was the first time anyone anywhere in the world could access accurate scorecards of any game that had been played so far, and also access stats, series stats, free of charge. But historical data, historical scorecards, those are things that I would say the more involved fans access. The more casual fans, they're more interested in what's happening now, the game that's currently in progress. So they are more interested or invested in the live scoring aspect of it. And StatsGuru, I would say, is similar to, the more involved fans who want to look at stats of games that have already happened. But the majority of fans, their interest is in the live game. So I think the live scorecard, probably, if you have to ask me, is my favorite child at Cricinfo.
Absolutely. So let's fast forward to current times. I mean, this is a conversation probably I'll go back again, time permitting. So if we just come to the, current situation right now in 2024, since cricket being the pioneer in live scoring and what you and Travis did at Cricinfo, if we look at stats, is cricket lagging behind other sports in potential what statistics can do, or are the stats democratic? I just want your views on this conversation because I keep hearing that cricket, there's a lot of room for improvement. And I'm a novice, I don't take pride in stats. Any stat can amaze me, and I use them for my podcast. I have in the past, and I think they have enhanced the conversation in a better direction. But what is your view on cricket stats compared to other sports? Has the progress been, has we made good progress since you set this thing in motion back in the day?
So, I would say we have made good progress, but your answer can be given from two different perspectives: how the average fan is consuming stats and how the professionals are consuming these stats. So, which one do you want to go with?
I mean, why don't you break it down both ways, if you can summarize it, because I'm sure there are listeners in this podcast who are heavily induced in stats and they think that's one way to improve the conversation, and then there are folks who probably still speak the old school language and but still rely heavily on stats subconsciously or not. So I would say, yeah, give both options. Why not?
Okay, so let's start with the average casual fan. So, StatsGuru has been there on Cricinfo since 2000. So that's what, close to 24 years now. And the people who are invested in stats know StatsGuru since then, love it, and use it extensively. But that population is extremely small compared to the average cricket fan. The average cricket fan Going to Stats Guru and running those queries, it's difficult. I don't know if you've seen the advanced query page of Stats Guru. It has like 15 checkboxes, 20 drop down, all sorts of text fields, because it can give you any kind of stat. And how do you make that available? Well, you have to create this web form, which is extremely complex. And that user interface is very daunting. So the average casual fan never really got into stats using Stats Guru. So I'm still, friendly with the people who run Crick Info, especially Sambit Bal. So whenever he comes to New York, we meet up, we chat, and things like that. And I've always been sort of bugging him about Stats Guru, that it didn't have a mobile app and the interface was terrible. I kept telling him, why don't you do something about Stats Guru? And then this is right, the January before the pandemic started, he was here. And he said, why don't you do something about it? As a joke. So although it was a joke, it was semi-serious. In July of that year, GPT-3 was released. So, these large language models, after ChatGPT, everyone knows them, but this was July of 2020. And when GPT-3 got released, I saw GPT-3, I saw some of the early demos, and I thought I could use GPT-3 to create a natural language interface for Stats Guru. So then I started working on it. I recruited my first two PhD students who had graduated in 2007, 2008 to kind of join me in the effort. So they joined me, and we managed to build a natural language interface for Stats Guru called Ask Crick Info, where you would ask questions in natural language, and then we'd convert that into a Stats Guru query at the back end and give you the answer back. So I think it's not as popular as we think it should be, and there are some improvements coming in the interface. But Ask Crick Info has helped, I think, democratize stats a little bit more. Now the casual fan can go to Ask Crick Info and ask questions. They can go and ask, what is Virat Kohli's record against leg spinners since 2017 in the IPL in natural language? And then you'll get the answer back. So a lot of these stats were available. Unfortunately, the user interface made it difficult for the casual fan to access them. Now things are improving. So that's as far as the casual fan goes. I think we are slowly approaching the stage where, people are sitting at a bar late in the night having an argument, and they can just go to Ask Crick Info, ask the question, get the answer, and settle the argument. We are not there yet, but hopefully we will be there soon. Now, coming to professionals, whether it's the Indian cricket team or an IPL team or a BBL team, their usage of stats and data has improved significantly. People used to go by gut feel and coaches who had a set way of coaching and telling people what to do. Those days have changed dramatically. In fact, I think Ashwin referred to it the other day. He said, now these days there's so much data and there's so much analysis of players that if you go and do the same thing again on the field, the opposition knows what to expect and they have a plan to counter that. Because they've seen videos, they've seen stats, they've seen data. They know exactly what you're trying to do. He says that's why he's constantly reinventing himself. He's constantly trying to bring about new balls into his sort of armory. Because if you don't do that, then the opposition knows what you're up to. Because they have seen all the stats, they've seen all the data, they've seen all the videos. So in the professional world, the use of stats data has improved significantly. It's coming close to what people in pro sports in the US, like basketball or football or baseball, do. or even tennis, as you probably know well.
I mean, I may be out of my depth here, but I think there's a lot to ponder here. So, is the data democratic enough? That's something gets tossed around on Twitter as well, compared to other sports. I mean, do you have any insights on that, or do you have any views on this? I know we are still evolving. I guess data can get more sophisticated and the conversation get more nuanced. How do you see that currently with Cricinfo, if we can use them as a standard?
So Cricinfo, StatsGuru is freely available. Ask Cricinfo is freely available. You can query any kind of stats. There's still some stats that are internal to Cricinfo, which they have not released
Like
to the
false
public,
shots.
like false shots, also what kind of shots were played. For instance, I have access to that internal data, and a few months ago I had ran an analysis of Rohit Sharma and the pull shot. That kind of data is not publicly available. The other kind of data that's not available is ball tracking data. And I hope Cricinfo makes that data available publicly. I think that would improve the quality of cricket writing and analysis significantly.
I think
But again,
Monga and Kartik Krishnaswamy, I think some of the good exponents of modern cricket writing, I think we learned through them about false shots. But is it available to the professional teams, or is it strictly for journalists? Is it, say, a BCCI or ECB have access to it, or they have their own mechanisms in place?
They probably have their own mechanism. There are other kinds of data providers. I don't know. I don't think Cricinfo gives that information to professional teams as yet. I may be wrong here. I don't know exactly how things work, but I don't think they have any relationship, formal relationship with professional teams or professional boards. Now, the boards might be collecting their own data. The teams might be collecting all their own data. So things like fall shot percentage, or pitch map, or what kind of shot a person plays to what kind of a ball. So I know I can right now go to StatsGuru, the internal version, and analyze how Rohit Sharma fares against short balls, or how Shreyas Iyer fares against short balls. I can do a deep analysis. We can short balls from a left-arm pace bowler, right-arm pace bowler, over the wicket, round the wicket, all sorts of things. All that information is available on Cricinfo. I hope it becomes more publicly available, when it becomes, as you say, democratically available.
It's probably giving
There are
them the
some
edge too,
changes.
right? And in a, sorry, not to cut, not meant to cut you off, but it's also in this, there are other competitive sites that are doing the same kind of analysis. So I think it's also something that separates them from the rest. I don't know if that makes it democratic, but you go get some of those articles by Monga and Karthik, because those articles are providing information that you don't get anywhere else.
That's true, but I think part of it is that they are just great writers, so they can do more with the data than the average Joe
Oh,
on the street.
absolutely. I mean, fan of both of them. Didn't
So
mean that, but I think
yeah,
access, yeah.
no,
Access
yeah,
plays, yeah.
I'm saying that giving if that's the reason why cricket was afraid, they shouldn't be, because they are terrific writers.
No, I'm just speculating sitting from outside because that's the tendency, when you don't know the ins and outs. So again, a bit of a personal question. We keep calling you as founding father of Cricinfo, and you said all these wonderful things in motion. What's your equation with the sport when you consume stats? Are you old school? Or do stats tell everything? Because I was at a tennis tournament and I talked to one of the Zverev brothers, Misha, and I asked him about stats and he said something funny. He said, stats don't tell you everything because what's a stat for serving into the sun and serving with the sun behind you? Because you say, my toss is this and my first serve percentage is 63 today, but you don't know if I'm serving into the sun. And what's the stats for how windy it was today? And I was stumped. I wasn't prepared to put a counter question, but that conversation always stayed with me because today we talk about stats in tennis, cricket, everywhere the conversation has been elevated, and if you don't know the stats, you feel left behind, and whatnot. So what is Vishal Mishra? How do you consume stats?
So I'm in 100% agreement that stats do not tell you the full picture. And even so some of these stats are just not available, right? Bowling into the wind or against the wind. So I also happen to play cricket a lot. I played cricket, at a club level, you can say at a fairly high level. And my bowling changes dramatically if I'm bowling into the wind versus bowling with the wind. My bowling analysis doesn't show whether I was bowling into the wind or bowling against the wind. And as a player, as a batsman, you don't treat each ball the same. Then the third ball of the seventh over of a game is very different from the third ball of the last over of an innings. The way you approach those balls is different. You know, lots of people keep saying that every ball is the same in cricket. It's absolutely not. The only people who say that are the ones who have not actually played cricket at a competitive level. You know, your mindset changes depending on the situation of the game. Your attitude changes, how nervous you are, how tightly you're gripping the ball or the bat. It changes with the situation of the game. And some of them can be reflected in stats. You know, you can do a deep analysis of the stats that are available. And then you'll see that each ball is not treated the same. In fact, you know, one of my, wearing my sort of academic research hat, I've done analysis of games. And what we have found that momentum actually plays a big part in cricket, the way it does in tennis. So let me give you an example. The Duckworth-Lewis system, right? The Duckworth-Lewis system is what mathematically we say is a Markovian system, in the sense that it only looks at the current state and doesn't care how you arrived at a state. So if your score is, let's say, 181 for four in the 35th over, the Duckworth-Lewis system doesn't care if you were 10 for 3 in the 4th over and recovered to 181 for 4, or if you were 179 for no loss in the 31st over and suddenly collapsed to 181 for 4. And we know that the innings are going to evolve very differently from that point on, depending on whether you came from 10 for 3 or 179 for no loss. But the Duckworth-Lewis system doesn't account for that at all, of how you arrive at 181 for 4. Right? And so if you're saying that stats tell you everything, and at 181 for 4, you'll play the ball the same way, regardless of whether you came from 10 for 3 or 175 for no loss, that's absolutely not true. So even just in terms of pure numbers, forget about whether you're bowling into the wind or whether the sun was out or whether it was cloudy. All those things are not reflected in the stats. But even the things that are reflected in the stats, every ball is not the same. So you have to have a more nuanced way of how do you consume these stats. So stats do tell you a lot, but you have to be careful in how you interpret those stats.
Yeah, I think
there's a...
Sorry, go ahead.
No. So there's something called conditional probability in math and statistics. I think a lot of people who push things about stats do not understand conditioning. Conditioning simply says that, you know, your probability changes depending on the context. So people talk about, you know, Virat Kohli has a low scoring rate. But if he wins your games, that means he is modulating his scoring rate according to what's required of the team. And the scoring rate that he needs to bat at reflects how well the bowling has done to restrict the opposition. So just looking at his absolute scoring rate doesn't really tell you the whole story if he's still winning you games. So what a lot of people do is they look at these numbers and stats in isolation without incorporating the context. And incorporating the context is extremely important. I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were asking something.
No, I think that's good. You finish your thought because I was again, look, I'm asking on behalf of the listeners, and hopefully I extract more information out of you in a way that everybody walks away with a good conversation here because I'm sure you have a lot to say. So I was just stuck in my own mind frame with the wind example that you broke down for me. Again, I'm in my late 40s. I enjoy cricket. I couldn't watch the series because 11 PM is my bedtime, and that's when cricket was starting. So I stayed up for an hour every now and then. But yeah, I just woke up to read, or watch the highlights. But again, there are a lot of fans who are even older or same age demographic. So again, stats have definitely enabled me and others to look into a different viewpoint. But there's also a school of thought, right? If honestly, if we even get the win data, right? I'm sure they're working on it to keep making it so sophisticated. It takes a certain enjoyment out of me if I know way too much. Again, I'm envious of all the sexy numbers that people are able to pull out there. I'm easily amazed, easily impressed. I go and look at it and say, wow, okay. All this time, the way I was consuming the sport was, it wasn't too complete. But at the same time, it's entertainment for me. So I don't really need to know when Stokes is bowling into the wind or Anderson's bowling with the wind. I think it's good to know, but at the same time, it doesn't really take away from the achievements of Ashwin or anyone who's playing. So I think that's my mindset. But it's good to know that someone who's such a pioneer that you also have a little modified view of it's not telling the full story, but it's telling a lot of stories. It's not I don't want to put a number in, but definitely is educating us. And stats are important. And I think that's the future. And the other aspect, a layman's term, I don't know, you've played cricket now, you've also played in New York. Is scoreboard awareness something professionals speak about? I know it was a very often used in commentary, but now we kind of safeguard it a bit because none of us are professionals. So, what is scoreboard awareness and where does that sit in with stats? Kind of a vague question, but. If a modern athlete knows stats, how is he or she incorporating that with scoreboard awareness? Has that changed or is it too difficult to answer?
I think the awareness of awareness is definitely there. Modern athletes do take into account what the scoreboard is, and the way they approach batting or bowling has changed significantly. For instance, when people are playing T20s, they are not looking at how many runs I need to score off each ball. But what they're thinking is that, okay, there are 40 balls left that I can possibly face. If I can hit 10 of them for six, I've scored 60 runs right there. Or if I can hit eight of them for four, 32 runs right there. And then I can take singles or whatever in the other balls. They're not looking to constantly score off every ball. But they know that, eight or 10 balls is all I need to hit these big shots, and that'll take me to a good score. So the way they have been thinking about playing is has also changed significantly. And all of these T20 players, all of these sort of white ball players are well aware of the scoreboard. Test matches, it's a slightly different calculus there. So I would say that the constant awareness of scoreboard of, how many balls do I need to hit a boundary of or this and that, it's less of that, and it's sort of a longer term calculation that goes on there. But in the shorter format, I think the scoreboard awareness is definitely there for the
Actually, the
players.
players would say that, even the Baz bowlers who were just in India. And again, there were a lot of observations made that these guys were playing the scoreboard and the series scoreboard. And and whatnot, and they were not scoring or accelerating as fast as the buildup was, and there were no 60 ball hundreds, stuff like that. So again, that's my point. Then they did their homework, England did, on matchups and whatever limitations they had or not. We can sit there and discuss that all day long, but they pride themselves on matchups, and they were saying, okay, we're going to score hundreds of runs, and they didn't come close in many matches. But again, that re-emphasizes the scoreboard pressure point you said, because athletes do recognize the scoreboard. They can bat till 9 or 10, but I'm sure 160 for 6 is different than 160 for 2.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right, so last
Yeah,
couple of questions. So go ahead, sorry. Yeah.
sure.
No, go
No,
ahead. Yeah.
I think Gavaskar used to famously say that he would never look at the scoreboard while batting. But if a player like that existed today, he'd be thrown out of the team in no time. You have to look at the scoreboard. You have to be aware of the match situation.
Okay, so it's kind of a not a difficult question, but it's an important question, because we still see you as someone who has inside connections, and but you are removed at the same time. You teach at Columbia, so Crick Info again. The fan wars are not a good use case to bring into a podcast, but at the same time, some of the more sophisticated people have these views. There are two school of thoughts. Some people see this an extension of old school English elitism in sport, when England cricket were kind of running cricket, and now the others see it as a servant of BCCI or Indian cricket. What's the truth there? It's an independent body, but pretty every day you get a new narrative. And do you have any insights to set the record straight on this one?
I don't know if I have any insights, but there's no question that BCCI has the financial muscle power now. There's absolutely no question. India is where the money is, the game. Whether it's the IPL or even the Test series or any game that India is involved in, it brings in so much television revenue that BCCI calls the shots. I mean, there's no insight needed for that. There was a while a few years back that where we used to talk about the big three, England, Australia, and India. I think even that is gone now. India is calling the shots in terms of power.
Absolutely, no surprise there. So,
And there are some questions being raised of whether they are using that financial power correctly or not. They should be doing more to encourage the game in some of the smaller nations. Now, recently, a couple of days ago, I think BCCI made a really welcome announcement of incentivizing Test cricket in India by, increasing the payments that are given to players who play Test cricket on a consistent basis. And I think someone called it a reward rather than an incentive. But the step that they have taken, I think they should probably do something like that for the rest of the cricketing fraternity. BCCI has the power. I think they also have the responsibility to grow the game globally. And they can. So, I don't know if that answered your question, but.
yeah, definitely. It's taken me to a place which is quite familiar, and I'll leave it there. But no surprises. So, last couple of questions, Vishal. And when you look back at this journey with Crick Info, and how the stats footprint that you put in place is now so sophisticated. So, two layers to this. A, did you think it'll take us this long to get here? And B, what does the future look like for the game, for Crick Info? And the statistics.
So, did I ever think that it'll take us this long? Well, I always thought, and I shouldn't take credit for this, but it was, Simon King who had the vision of how cricket on the internet would evolve. And I kind of bought into that vision early. And Yeah, I think we've made rapid progress. It's not a question of how it has taken this long. I think we have been making progress all along, and it's at a good place right now. There are still room for improvement, and I think things are happening. But the progress so far has been good. Now, in terms of Crickinfo and its evolution, I don't know if you're aware. Right now, things are in a bit of a flux, because in India, Jio, Reliance Jio, they are buying up all the Disney assets. There's some sort of joint venture that's happening, and Cricinfo is owned by ESPN, which is owned by Disney, and Cricinfo is moving as part of this new venture or new entity that is being formed between Jio and Disney. And so I don't know what the future will bring to Cricinfo as a result of this change. Now, I work closely with the Cricinfo again the past couple of years, because I was developing Ask Cricinfo, and I'll be honest that I was kind of disappointed at the level of resources that ESPN was putting into Cricinfo. I think they could put in a lot more resources, which would actually help Cricinfo grow a lot more. Cricinfo was the undisputed number one, and then in India, Crickbus came along, became a rival, and I think in terms of live scorecards, it has even surpassed Cricinfo. But Cricinfo, for the past few years, did not get the attention that it needed from ESPN. For whatever reason, they did not think it was worth their while to put in the resources. I hope that'll change when it moves to the kind of new management, which values cricket a lot more than people sitting executives sitting in Connecticut did. So I think that should be a welcome change. If not, there are other entities. I'm also involved quite a bit. I'm an advisor to this company Dream 11. I don't know if you're aware of them.
Yes, yeah.
So the founder, the CEO of Dream 11, did his MBA at Columbia, and I helped the company get started in its early days. And I've been an advisor to the company. The company has now grown, leaps and bounds. And I know how internally Dream 11 works in terms of resources, in terms of engineering, marketing, sales, and then organization like that could do wonders for Cricinfo. There's so many things that could be done in terms of just sort of data and stats, and making a lot more progress than it has already happened. And Cricinfo having a home with resources like that, I think, would be fantastic.
Yeah, let's
I
absolutely
hope,
hope for the best. Yeah.
yeah.
All right, so floor is yours. Last question. Would any message for the listener who's kind of indebted, to you and Travis for the kind of work you guys have put in, and today we are having this conversation. Any topic of your choice, either the consumption of stats or how to view the sport, any parting words for a listener out there?
I mean it very sincerely when I say that people shouldn't feel indebted to Travis or me, because we were doing it for ourselves. Everything that we were doing is because we wanted this information, we wanted stats. In the process, we ended up building Cricinfo, which everyone uses. But if we had not built it for everyone to use, it wouldn't have grown. So I've always looked at Cricinfo from a selfish point of view. So, I mean, it's nice that you say that people are indebted, but that's a byproduct. That was not the main aim. Now, coming back to any words, I guess you cannot avoid it, but there seems to be a lot of negativity on, let's say, Twitter amongst cricket fans. And I wish that would go away. You know, even in India, Kohli fans are fighting with Rohit Sharma fans. Why? Why can't you appreciate both players? Why do Indian fans have to fight with English fans, or Indian fans have to fight with Pakistani fans? We all love the sport. Appreciate the game. Appreciate the players. It's not that hard to do. But sometimes I get very annoyed when I see all this negative talk on social media. And the other annoying thing that I find on social media, some people believe that only they know what the correct way to enjoy the game is. I wish such people would quieten down. Let everyone enjoy the game the way they want to enjoy the game. So those would be my two parting thoughts.
No, I think that's
Do
kind of
not
profound.
claim to know. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I should be sorry. I keep cutting you off. Yeah, I should pick up your pauses. You teach in school, so you have your own rhythm. So I kind of so yeah, finish your thought, please.
No, I'm sorry. No, I was thinking that just these two things, that be more positive, be more appreciative, and do not denigrate the way others watch and enjoy the game.
Yeah, I think I myself do a lot of fence sitting. And even when I talk to Vijay and some of the other guys who come on the podcast, I have opinions, but my opinions are half-baked. And Twitter is not a place it'll eat you alive if you don't have the credentials. I mean, you can get away by saying half the stuff because you're Vishal Mishra. If I go and put even 2% of what you said, yeah, I won't have a place to hide. But yeah, but that's, I think that's the Twitter market, right? It brings us a lot of knowledgeable voices. These podcasts of content creators is only possible because of social media. Otherwise, there was no way of for someone like me to know you or a Siddharth Vaidyanathan or Ayaz, Mehmet, the folks who have come to this podcast. But yeah, I think Twitter is, like you said, Kohli fans versus Sharma fans. We grew up, doing not the classic fan wars, but we grew up talking about Kapil versus Imran as, rivals. But that was among Indian fans only. Now it's Sharma versus Kohli and stats versus psychobabble and
Yeah.
it's never ending, right? It's a different place. But anyway, thanks for doing this. I love this conversation. A little bit technical for my taste, but I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are going to run away with this. And you simplified, dumbed it down for novices like myself. I'd love to host you again. This maybe on a different note, we can talk about a favorite series or a favorite matchup in cricket. But once again, thank you to you and Travis. Ideally, we should have spoken to both, but I'm happy, you came here and talked about yourself, himself, and the evolution. I had a fun chat. Thank you very much, Vishal.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much for having me and having Travis's spirit.